is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Mario Ritter with Paul Alexander in Washington. Our show might sound a little different today. We are having some technical difficulties. Thank you in advance for bearing with us. Coming up, we'll have updates on the weekend elections in Nigeria and Senegal, the first summit between the Arab world and the European Union, and Oscar winners with links to Africa. We'll have these and more stories tonight. Incumbent President Muhammadu Buhari took an early lead in official results from Saturday's delayed elections, but the opposition claims the figures were incorrect and unacceptable. While about 70 presidential candidates were on the ballot, the race was expected to come down to a close race between Buhari and former Vice President Atiku Abubakar. Election officials say the balloting was relatively peaceful despite about three dozen fatalities. The election originally was scheduled for February 16th, but was delayed when election officials said at the last minute that they weren't ready yet. U.S. observers say the postponement likely affected turnout, though no official figures were immediately released. The process then was hit by glitches Saturday that led to some polling stations opening yesterday. Still managing to get through the balloting without major issues seemed to soothe investors, with stocks and long-term bond rates both rising in trade today. There was no official death toll. Observers counted a range from 16 to 39. We have on the line with us VOA staffer Peter Clote in Lagos. Peter, can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear, yes.
Peter, what is the situation that you've heard with the vote?
I just received a press statement from the main opposition, the People's Democratic Party, or the PDP, effectively rejecting results of the presidential election currently being announced by the Independent National Electoral Commission, or INEC. Uche Secondus, the chairman of the PDP, said the results are inaccurate and unacceptable. And he accused security agencies, INEC, of colluding with the ruling All Progressive Congress, or APC, to manipulate the elections just to ensure President Muhammadu Buhari is re-elected. So that is the latest development. It comes as the Independent National Electoral Commission collates all results from 36 states and the federal capital currently at its headquarters in Abuja at the moment.
Peter, is there any feedback from INEC about the accusations from the PDP?
No, not yet. We are yet to hear officially from them to react to the accusations coming from the main opposition People's Democratic Party. The electoral body is busy, collating all the results from the 36 states. So they have yet to really read or perhaps react directly to the accusations being leveled against them.
Does this bode badly for the post-election temperature, the public outcry?
Well, reaction has been really muted, particularly here in Lagos, when it was expected that it was going to be very competitive. However, initial results here in Lagos show incumbent President Muhammadu Buhari is leading with over 130,000 votes. Let us not forget that the two most populous states in the country are Kano, followed directly by Lagos State. So if you are able, a candidate is able to win in Lagos State and does effectively well up north in Kano, that means that that candidate could equally win the election. And that is what appears to be what the All Progressive Congress or the APC seem to be enjoying now, because they think once they've won Lagos, Kano will be in their bag. So President Muhammadu Buhari will be re-elected. That is what they have been saying.
That's Peter Clote from Lagos. Thank you very much, Peter.
You're welcome.
Vote counting also has begun in Senegal after Sunday's peaceful presidential election. Long lines of voters were reported early Sunday. Four main candidates are competing against current President Macky Sall, who is the clear front-runner due to economic improvements in the country. The challengers include Idrissa Seck, Ousmane Sonko, Madike Niang, and Issa Sall. The president of Senegal's Electoral Commission has said there have been no major problems in the voting. Early results are expected as soon as today or tomorrow. If no candidate receives more than 50% of the vote, then the top two candidates will face each other in a runoff election in March. Protests calling for the ouster of Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir continue as he makes sweeping changes to the country's government. Bashir declared a one-year state of emergency during a speech Friday. He also dissolved the national and provincial governments. The longtime president urged citizens to stop protesting. On Saturday, Bashir named the defense minister of his new defense minister as his new vice president, and a former provincial governor as the new prime minister. Both are described as hardliners. The United States has expressed deep concern about the state of emergency. We have with us correspondent Margaret Bashir.
How are you?
Yes?
I'm here.
Margaret, good to talk to you. What is the latest about the and the response about the state of emergency in Sudan?
Well, the story is very fluid. Just as we're coming on the air, we're hearing new reports that President Bashir is issuing more decrees banning some of the rallies, putting restrictions on unlicensed demonstrations, and he's also putting decrees about disseminating false news. He's imposing currency controls. So this is really sort of heating up now since Friday. Here at the Security Council, though, the meeting was about Darfur this morning, which is a region of Sudan, and some of the ambassadors took the opportunity to bring up this national emergency declaration that was issued on Friday, and the acting U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, Jonathan Cohen, expressed concern from Washington about this. He said they are watching what's going on, they're studying the impact of it, but they're deeply concerned, and he urged the government of Sudan to respect the rights of all individuals and to immediately end the violent repression of the peaceful protests.
Margaret, what other, I know it's very fluid, have the protests increased or decreased as a result of some of the government actions? Have you heard anything about that?
Well, that I don't know that I'd be in a position to comment all the way from New York, but you know, they've certainly spread since they began a couple of months ago in the northeast of the country. You know, people are upset about the rising price of bread and the cost of fuel, the inflation, and so they have spread to other cities beyond the northeast. At today's Security Council meeting, the ambassador of Sudan did speak, and he seemed to he mentioned the state of emergency, and he criticized council members for bringing it up, saying that wasn't the purpose of this meeting. You're only supposed to talk about Darfur, so he was trying to get them on a technicality. But he said that they informed the Secretary General of the United Nations last month that they intended to decree a state of emergency in two provinces, in North Kordofan and Kassafar, according to their constitutional provisions. But he said that the government respects fully the inalienable rights of the Sudanese people enshrined in their constitution. But as you can see, there's, you know, the security forces are forcefully putting down these protests. They're using tear gas, in some cases live ammunition, in other cases rubber bullets. So there have been numerous injuries. There have been some civilian deaths, and you know, the situation is spiraling. President Bashir was in Cairo on Sunday, and he sort of dismissed it a bit, saying that it's outside groups are undermining his rule that are instigating these protests, and that some of the people were trying to copy the Arab Spring, and that's what the purpose of this was.
Thank you very much, Margaret, for that report.
Thank you.
That is VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir. Leaders from the European Union and Arab League are meeting in Egypt today for their first summit to discuss migration, security, and business deals. They promised yesterday to increase cooperation on terrorism and deal with illegal migration. However, the process of reaching agreement on a joint statement has been difficult. EU and Arab League foreign ministers failed to agree earlier this month on a text after Hungary objected to the section on migration. Pardon me. Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orbán was among those who said they were concerned about extremists entering their countries with refugees. Europe's migration problems are a main reason for the two-day meeting, which the bloc offered last October. Although the number of people crossing the central Mediterranean Sea has fallen in recent years, European nations are still struggling to deal with the flow. The main idea chosen for the meeting in the Red Sea resort town is investing in stability. The EU wants Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi to order his Coast Guard to detain migrants leaving Libya and take them back to the African mainland. The idea appears to be that the migrants on the Mediterranean Sea do not become the responsibility of European nations. You are listening to Africa News Tonight on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Mario Ritter with Paul Alexander in Washington. It is 15 minutes past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Voting counting is underway for presidential elections in Nigeria and Senegal. The first Arab EU summit is underway in Egypt, and the Oscar Film Awards had some African links. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The deaths of at least 24 gold miners have left Zimbabwe pondering economic and environmental justice while evaluating the country's preparedness to deal with disaster. Reporter Kudyidze Zinovachi has more details. And
the disaster after artisanal miners at battlefields were trapped in shafts that flooded after a heavy downpour on the 12th of this month. Over a week later, the rescue efforts are still ongoing, but with limited resources. Briggs Bomba is a convener with Citizen Manifesto, a social movement made up of various civic organizations. He gave an update on the situation at the mine just over 150 kilometers west of Harare.
We are here in Battlefields, Kadoma, at the site of the mining disaster where we lost dozens of our citizens, and sadly some are still trapped right behind me and they've not yet been retrieved. It's doubly sad that of those who have died in this tragedy, the majority are young people under the age of 30 years, the flower of this nation.
Bomba says economic misery and desperation have pushed many of his fellow countrymen into dangerous and dehumanizing means of survival. 8 miners were freed in the early stages of the rescue mission. Now, very little hope remains for finding more survivors. Tuesday, Minister of Mines Winston Chitando told journalists the government has contained the situation.
The question was whether government has managed to contain the situation, and the answer is yes. As you may be aware, the accident happened in two shafts which are near each other. In the first shaft, the dewatering exercise was completed. The next shaft which we are working on is a much bigger shaft, and the dewatering process is underway.
Minister Chitando says the disaster claimed the lives of 24 and 8 survivors were rescued. Going forward, the Minister of Environment, Tourism and Hospitality, Priska Mufumira, has said they will continue to assess mining activities to ensure safety is prioritized. Civic organization People and Earth Solidarity Law Network Executive Director Lenin Chisaira spoke about the report they compiled on the disaster.
The accident exposes main issues concerning economic and environmental justice in Zimbabwe. These issues range from lack of disaster preparedness by the state and by responsible institutions, as well as local authorities.
The government's preparedness has come under scrutiny after it failed to swiftly respond to the disaster and instead started a crowdfunding initiative for the crisis. Chisaira says going forward, disaster response system should be evaluated and adequately funded. He adds a new commission of inquiry should be put in place to look into the battlefield's disaster. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
Somali officials say Al-Shabaab militants fatally shot 9 civilians today, not far from the capital, Mogadishu. Officials say the militants attacked 11 civilians who were cleaning the streets. The violence took place in the lower Shabelle region, about 20 kilometers west of Mogadishu. The governor of the region, Mohamed Ibrahim Barre, told VOA that the militants killed 6 women and 3 men. The other 2 were injured. Barre said the militants do not want the people to clean the streets because they hide improvised explosive devices in garbage, trees, and undergrowth. Also today, the U.S. military says it carried out 4 new strikes against al-Shabaab in lower Shabelle region. The strikes targeted al-Shabaab facilities and checkpoints, killing 2 militants. Al-Shabaab claimed the dead were civilians, including a child. The U.S. military said no civilians were killed or injured in the strikes. Kigali has started to demolish houses and other structures that have been built in wetlands. This is in line with the Environment Protection Law enacted in 2005 to prevent wetlands amid growing encroachment and degradation concerns. But Rwandans whose houses are destroyed claim the government is not reimbursing their losses or showing them where they can settle. Eugene Iwamani has more details from Kigali.
That is the noise of axes, hoes, and other materials that are being used to demolish houses. This one is in the Gasabo district at Kinamba. It is owned by Apabena, the association that helps poor children. The compound was built in 1995. The owners are obliged to hire machines and manpower to destroy their own houses or face numerous penalties. Apabena's accountant, Muhide Benal, who was present, says it's difficult to destroy your own house. We built a long time ago. Building here was not prohibited then. We have the authorization from Kachil District. I don't know how the children will help. We react when they come back from schools. It is very sad to destroy your own house, but we don't have anything else to do. But I don't know where children will sleep when they come back. This destroyed compound has many houses which the association says are worth 500 million grand francs, or $564,000. Association workers say destroying this institution means a double loss.
From the first day of February, every single employee has received a letter informing them that their jobs are being eliminated. We not only lose houses, but also the bread that our families had to eat. Destroying these houses is in line with the environment protection law enacted in 2005. Since the law was announced, some Rwandans have been moving willingly from wetlands. However, many who are poor have sworn to stay or die. Marie Iradukunda lives in Igasabo district. We have planned not to give the authorities the land documents. They will either destroy houses on our heads or throw us in Nyabarongo River. According to Sabizgo Parfait, the vice mayor of Kigali, no matter how loud the residents can cry, the decision will not be changed. All activities which are in places we identify as wetlands have to be removed. Of course, due to this resistance of the citizens, we cannot remove them all in 1 year. But we surely have a plan of saying, let's remove this year, that in next year. But finally, all have to be removed because we informed them before. This order came after President Paul Kagame warned developers on wetlands and public officials who issue building permits that they would be dealt with. The Ministry of Environment says buildings, livestock, crowds, markets, parking, car washes and playgrounds are among the facilities that need to be cleared. Environment Management Authority figures indicate the country has over 850 wetlands with mapped geographic limits. However, a 2015 State of Environment and Outlook report put wetlands among the country's most threatened ecosystems in need of protection. The government says failure to comply with wetlands conservation rules result in rampant floods. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
And Africans and African people of African descent registered big wins at the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences Awards in Hollywood last night. The Oscars are considered Hollywood's top awards for the movie industry. Rami Malek won Best Actor for his portrayal of rock singer Freddie Mercury in Queen in Bohemian Rhapsody. Malek is the son of Egyptians who immigrated to the United States. Mercury himself was born in Zanzibar, an island off Africa's east coast. The highly successful action film Black Panther also did well on Oscar night. The film, about a fictional African kingdom, won 3 Oscars. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Mario Ritter in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners at Nairobi's FM stations, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16. For other listeners, please stay tuned for the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 hours for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, I'm Mario Ritter. Thanks for choosing Voice of America.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.